Hi everyone, welcome to the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast. My name is Jackie Pilisoff and I'm your host. I'm the creator and editor-in-chief of Divorce Girl Smiling, which is a website, a podcast, and a mobile app. For people listening to this podcast, you're probably really focused on your divorce, or you're thinking about getting divorced, or you've been going through divorce for a while and it's just not over yet. Or maybe you're newly divorced and you probably are really focused on what's going to happen in the divorce. How is the outcome going to be? What's going to happen when the divorce is final? And that's really understandable, but you're probably not thinking about long-term things. And the reality is that after you get divorced, things happen, things come up in life. I could name 20 examples, and you find yourself possibly having to go back to court. And I know you're sitting here thinking, Jackie, I don't even want to think about that right now. I'm just trying to get through my divorce. And I totally get it. But the reality is, if you have to go back to court after divorce, what we want to do is A, try to prevent that. And B, just get you a little educated just in case you do, so that it will help you also in your divorce now to think of different things so maybe you won't have to. To talk about going back to court after a divorce, I have one of my favorite divorce attorneys, Anna Krolikowska, with me. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Jackie. Thank you for having me.
For those of you who don't know Anna, Anna Krolikowska is a family law / divorce attorney. She is the Illinois State Bar Association president, although you do not have that role anymore.
For another year, I'm the immediate past president, but you can also call me a past president of the ISBA, and that's a title I hold proudly.
Oh my gosh, and you should. I mean, that is huge. And Anna, aren't you like only one of a couple women who have ever held that position?
I was only the fifth woman since ISBA was created in 1877.
That is crazy. I'm so impressed by that, Anna. Great, great job. So Anna has been a divorce attorney for 16 years, so she's very experienced. And Anna, I want to ask you before we get to this list of reasons why somebody might have to go back to court after a divorce is final. I want to ask you, is it common that people go back to court after divorce? And what do you think people can do to prevent that?
Great question. So yes, unfortunately, it is common because there are things that you cannot anticipate or did not anticipate at the time of the divorce. Maybe as Jackie you mentioned, you're just trying to get through it and get it done, and you're not looking long term. Maybe things change, something new develops, and you're in a situation where you respond or have to respond to something that developed. What can you do to prevent it? In many of my cases, that's why the clients choose to use collaborative divorce process, because as part of that process, we really try to figure out different scenarios, looking into the future and helping the couple not only to anticipate those and plan for them, but also to help them to figure out how to communicate about any new events or changes so that they minimize the likelihood of going back to court. But it is not uncommon for couples to find themselves back in court if they cannot work it out on their own or with the help of a mediator or a collaborative team.
Okay, so let me know if I'm hearing you correctly. If a person chooses to get divorced through the collaborative process and or through mediation, you personally think that they have less of a chance that they'll have to go back to court after divorce?
That's one of the core ideas of collaborative process. Absolutely.
Wow. And I love that.
From a perspective of looking at it in general, if you're using collaborative process or mediation, you're saying we want to work together to work out how to divorce and what our future will look like. You're at least willing to work together to try to figure it out. If you're in a litigated process, unfortunately, either your spouse has said absolutely not, I will not consider using those two methods for whatever reason, or maybe you were in a situation where the attorney with whom you spoke at the beginning of your case really only practiced in the traditional litigated process, and you were led to believe, or you believe, that that was your only option.
We should actually do another podcast just to talk about what collaborative divorce is, what that process is, because you're right. It is a process that people might not know about, and it might save you from having to go back to court, because it sounds like during the process of getting divorced, you're going to learn how to communicate with your spouse so that if something does change, the two of you can work it out instead of going to court and having a judge make those decisions for you.
That's exactly right. And I would be happy to talk to you about that at any point in time. Just let me know.
Okay, definitely we'll do that. You're listening to the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, divorce attorney Anna Krolikowska. And Anna and I are talking about going back to court after divorce. And Anna, I want to get to six issues that might cause someone to go back to court after a divorce is final. So for the listeners, just so you know, Anna wrote an article on Divorce Girl Smiling called Can You Go Back to Court After a Divorce is Final? And of course, in the first paragraph, she said, yes, you can. So we are going to go over six issues that might cause someone to go back to court after a divorce is final. Before we get to the six things, I want to mention two Divorce Girl Smiling partners that I think you are going to love if you're in need of their services. The first one is Patricia Van Herren, who is a divorce attorney out of the LA area. And I've gotten to know Patricia really well the past few months. And Patricia focuses so much on mediation and the collaborative process. Patricia can be found by just Googling her or looking on Divorce Girl Smiling. And the second person I want to mention is my newest Divorce Girl Smiling partner. Her name is Tracy Conan, and Tracy is a CPA and a forensic accountant who developed this tool called Divorce Money Guide. And basically what the Divorce Money Guide is it's a handbook for you to be able to determine and find if your spouse is hiding money in your divorce. So basically, when people get divorced, some people hide money. And in order to find the money, you have to hire a forensic accountant or your divorce attorney hires somebody, and that can cost thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to do it. What Tracy has developed in the Divorce Money Guide is a way for you to do this yourself, and then you can show your lawyer what you found, and it will cost so much less. Okay, on to the six things. Here's the first one. Your ex is not adhering to the marital settlement agreement.
That is the number one issue that finds couples back in court, or why the couples find themselves back in court after a divorce. And basically, you're in a situation where maybe the marital settlement agreement required your ex to transfer a retirement account or a car title, or to refinance a mortgage, or to put the home on the market, or to set up an automatic child support payment, and that has not happened. You've asked multiple times, you've attempted to work it out, and they're just not complying with the divorce decree. And you find yourself in a situation where you have to make a decision. Do you live with the situation as it is, or do you go back to court? And especially if this involves financial issues, as much as you might hate having to go through the experience and hate having to spend additional money on this, it might very well be worth it to you to explore going back to court.
All right. Now, Anna, something that has always bothered me is that when I got divorced, we walked out of the courthouse and, you know, my lawyer was like, don't you feel great? It's over. You must feel really relieved. And I did. But I never realized that there was a whole checklist of things that my ex and I had to do. Because people walk out of a divorce and they're so caught up in the relief that it's over that you almost forget to do the things. Do you agree? Do you see that that happens with people?
I do. And that's why when I'm working with clients, I remind them, not exactly the day they're getting divorced, because that in and of itself is a completely overwhelming and difficult experience, even if there's a sense of relief as well. But it's going to be a difficult day for you. So certainly not the day of, but shortly thereafter, I would follow up with my clients and remind them or ask, have you done X, Y, and Z? And we try to do it as soon as possible after the divorce is finalized, so that way you don't have to keep coming back to it. It's done.
Right. And so my lawyer did not do that. I never heard from the person after the divorce. And I forgot to do a bunch of things. My ex didn't do them either. Now, all that said, okay, you forgot. Now, you know, you say something to your ex and he or she should just do it. But in the case that you keep asking them and they don't do it, you're going to have to go back to court. And it really stinks. And I think that there should be something in every marital settlement agreement that says, you need to put your house on the market by this date. You need to refinance your mortgage by this date. You need to transfer the retirement account by May 15th. You know what I mean? Because then it gives people a sense of urgency that they have to do it.
So, Jackie, in a lot of marital settlement agreements, we say that. At least I certainly do. But even with those provisions, you know, let's stay with the house. You have to put the house on the market by August 15th. Even if it says that, sometimes the person who's supposed to do it does not do it within that time frame. So you might need to still go back to court.
If you have these time provisions, at least you have a leg to stand on. You know, you can go back
exactly.
to court and a judge isn't going to go, well, she'll do it. No, she was supposed to do it by May 15th. It's now July 30th, you know, so mm-hmm. I do think that's really wise. Okay, so that was the first reason why you might have to go back to court, and probably the biggest. And as Anna and I said before, if you get divorced through the collaborative process or through mediation, these kinds of things are less likely to happen because who wouldn't follow a marital settlement agreement that you agreed on, that you actually went to a mediator and bargained and worked it out? And so you actually set the terms and agreed to them, right, Anna?
Yes, that's exactly it. You have more of the control over the process and the outcome when you're either in mediation or collaborative process. When you're in court, when you're litigating, you are choosing or by default in a process where you make your best argument, your soon-to-be ex or your ex makes his or her best argument, and then the judge decides. And the judge is bound by what the statute says. Whereas if you're negotiating, either in mediation or collaborative process, you can make agreements that are not necessarily the same as what a judge would decide, but if you're agreeing to it, then that becomes part of your divorce decree.
Right, and you're more likely, like I said, to stick to something and keep your word
yes.
about things that you agreed to. Okay, let's
yes.
move on to number two. The parenting plan isn't working, so tell me about that.
That's another big one. And there are so many reasons why this parenting plan might not be working. Maybe your kids have gotten older and what worked while they were 3 and 5 doesn't work as well when they're 13 and 15. Someone is refusing to bring the kids timely or someone is not making sure that the kids are ready to go with the other parent. Maybe the kids themselves are resisting a certain parenting schedule. Maybe your ex has moved And now you have to figure out what will happen with the parenting schedule because it's not workable. So there are a lot of reasons why you might want to go back to court to deal with parenting issues.
Some other reasons that could cause this are maybe someone moves further away, one of the parents, so the schedule doesn't make sense to do, the schedule you had. It might make sense to do like longer periods of time with each person since it's further away. Or one of them gets married and the kids really don't want to go there because they don't really feel comfortable with the new spouse or something like that. But Anna, I have a question. Now, I know you can only
Sure.
answer for the state of Illinois, but what happens when a kid gets to be like 14 or 15? Don't you feel like the kids kind of call the shots? I mean, do they have to, by law, still go to a parent's house that they don't want to go to when they're, 15, 16 years old?
If there is a parenting agreement that specifies that they are to go, then whoever is the parent who has the kids with them might actually have some problems if the other parent decides to go back to court and claim that the other parent is interfering with their parenting time or is antagonizing the kids. Yes, I understand that we're talking about teens, and sometimes teens can be difficult. But you also want to make sure that you, as a party to an agreement, are doing what you can to comply with an agreement. Now, if it's not working, if there is an issue, that might be your reason to go back to court. And if you are in a litigated process, let's stick with that, and you have a teen, an older teen, 14, 15, 16, who is refusing, objecting, of really not willing to work with the parenting schedule. The court might determine that a guardian ad litem needs to be appointed. This is a special attorney whose job it is to look out for the benefit of the child, to talk to the parents, the kids, investigate, come back to the judge, and give the judge a recommendation. And it might be time to change the parenting agreement or adjust it in some way that works for the child. So, if there is a situation happening in your life and it's not working, the parenting agreement is not working for your family, this might be a time to consider going back to court.
Now, what's so interesting is that I've been divorced for 15 years, and I remember when my kids got to a certain age, like 14, 15, we didn't even keep a schedule anymore. I mean, we had been divorced since they were 3 and 5, and we let them make the decision where they wanted to go. And most of the time, they didn't want to be with either one of us. They just wanted to be with their friends.
An
So.
honest answer from a divorce attorney, that's what you hope for most families, right? That you have this parenting agreement, but either it matches your life perfectly or you, as parents, by agreement, figure out a way that makes sense and you're not having to go back to the agreement. The agreement comes into play where you're disagreeing as to what to do regarding parenting.
Right. So really sad if it comes to that, because I think that when kids get older, they should have the right to make their own decisions. But I guess I didn't know this. You're telling me they, by law, they really don't until they're 18. You're listening to the Divorce Girl Smiling podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, divorce attorney Anna Krolikowska. Anna's been a divorce attorney for 16 years. I know her well. I think the world of her. We're talking about possible reasons people might have to go back to court after divorce. And we're on number 3, child support changes. So tell me about that.
That's a common one as well. So, someone might lose their job or they are no longer paying child support that you agreed to in the divorce, or both spouses now make more money. Illinois is one of those states where, for child support purposes, at least since 2015, we looked at both parents' incomes. So, that is different than what was in place 10, 15 years ago. Or, what if your ex starts making significantly more money and you feel that the kids deserve more child support? Or one of the kids graduates from high school and no longer would receive child support? Or what about if there's a change in the schedule and you now have the kids much more than you did before? Again, maybe the child support needs to be adjusted.
Now, do you think that people who go through mediation or collaborative process can just say, okay, here's what I think is fair. The couple discusses it and then just agrees and maybe not even file anything, or they just tell their lawyers, they draw it up, and then it's much cheaper and much less time and really no effort.
So it would be the latter. I would say document whatever change you have to your agreements. So if you can work it out in either mediation or collaborative process and there's an update, have the lawyers prepare the documents and file it with the court. There are also some cases, and I have been involved in some cases, where we actually plan for future changes in child support. Now, you can't anticipate everything under all circumstances. But some couples want to have a long-term plan so they know what will happen in the future.
Moving on to number four of why you might have to go back to court after divorce. College was not discussed in your original divorce. Now, this just kills me, Anna, because why? Don't you think a good attorney would put something in there about college? I mean, I got divorced when my kids were 3 and 5. There was nothing discussed about college. Now, why wouldn't they just put it in? Because we didn't even care, because that seemed like 100 years away. Well, guess what? It gets there before you even blink.
Absolutely, time flies by quickly. So there could be different reasons why it was not included. It could be literally not included, like you mentioned in your particular case, or if the kids are young and the parents cannot agree, it could say something along the lines of college expenses are reserved. What that means is you will have to come back to court in the future to deal with it. And it is often a way of finalizing the case if the parents really cannot agree as to college expenses at that point in time, especially if the kids are young. Because the thought process is, okay, you can't agree now, it's not an immediate concern, and you'll just have to come back to court. But many couples don't want to come back to court, and those couples do have the conversations and try to figure out what will happen with the college expenses. So whether that means each parent is contributing or committing to contribute a certain percentage, or you're saying that maybe the child will have some sort of an obligation to contribute a portion of the college expenses and the remainder are paid by the parents. Maybe you want to have provisions that talk about what happens if there are 529 plans or family money set aside for college. How would that be credited? If you have one parent who is saving for college and the other parent is not, you would want something in your agreement that says that the saving parent should benefit from that money rather than both parents benefit from it, especially if you're saving after the divorce, right? You're saving your non-marital money.
All right. Now, to me, my personal opinion is that I think it's a huge scam if the divorce attorneys do not discuss college. I don't care if your kid is 6 months old. I think they should put something in there, because then at least there's a chance you don't have to go back. Because you're going to have to go back anyway if there's nothing in there. So that's just my personal opinion. The other thing I wanted to ask you, Anna, is tell me if I'm right. In Illinois, this is a big question. Who pays for college in a divorce? This is what I heard. Illinois law states that one parent pays 33.3%, and the other parent pays the other 33.3%, and the child is responsible for 33.3%. Is that your experience? Is that correct?
Some families handle it that way. I have also had families decide that the parents will split the expenses 50-50. I have had families decide that the child will contribute 20% and the parents split the remainder. I have had situations where the higher earning parent, or maybe parent with higher amount of assets, will pay a greater percentage than the other parents. So there are numerous ways of handling college expenses. The statute talks about the court looking at the parents' income and assets and their ability to pay. And it doesn't specifically say one third, one third, one third.
I see. So basically, going back again to mediation or collaborative process, you can draft what the two of you want to do, and it can always be changed.
Yes, there are instances where financial issues, so child support, child expenses, college expenses, are modifiable going forward. What you might not be able to do, so let's say the first 2 years of a child's college education have already passed and you're bringing the case back to court and you're asking that judge to decide. The judge can decide what will happen with the expenses for the remaining 2 years, but he or she might not be able to impose a retroactive obligation. So it will all depend on your specific situation, the timing of it, the facts of the case. So if you have a child who is wrapping up high school or is a junior, that might be the time to really take a look at it. I understand that you might not want to deal with it at that point in time, but you're better off getting an answer on college expenses before the child starts than in the middle of a college experience.
Absolutely.
And even better, if you address it prior to the kids being in college.
Absolutely. Okay, moving on, we have two more. And number five is kids become emancipated. So that means they turn 18, child support goes away. But why do you have to go back to court? Why can't you just say, okay, no more child support, the kid's 18?
You could say it. And some agreements will say upon emancipation, there's a change to child support. But maybe the child support termination was not specific enough. Maybe you're in a situation where you really want to make sure, even if it's just one court appearance, that the judge is on board and will say, yes, your obligation has ended if you're the one paying. Maybe you need some assistance figuring out child support going forward, because there might be other children who still would be entitled to receive child support. And your oldest child, the one who's emancipating, might be going to college. So maybe you have a combination of a question for the court. What should happen with the child support and what should happen with the college expense contributions?
Before we get to the last reason why somebody might go back to court after divorce, I want to mention two more Divorce Girl Smiling partners that you might want to contact if you're in need of their services. The first one is Affiliates in Counseling, which is a therapy practice of about 30 therapists, and they have offices all over Chicagoland, in the city and then in different suburbs. I have known the founder, Jason Price, for years. I think that the therapists there are amazing. I have met several of them and really think the world of them. And the second thing I want to mention is that a lot of times, when you're going through a divorce, one of the stipulations is that you're required to get life insurance upon getting divorced. And somebody who can help you is Ruthie Schwartz, who is my dear friend who I've known for over 10 years. And Ruth is an insurance professional who owns a company called Money in Motion. And I just absolutely love her. She's experienced, she's smart, but she's such a good person and she knows so much. So if you need life insurance, Ruthie is your person. And you can find both these people on divorcegirlsmiling.com. Okay, now on to the sixth reason why somebody might have to go back to court after divorce. Changes to maintenance. Why would maintenance have to change?
Well, and it's not a given that you will be able to change maintenance, right? A lot depends on what your judgment provides. But this might be an issue you revisit. So for example, in some instances, maintenance can be reviewable after a certain period of time, which means that if you're asking for maintenance to continue for longer than the original agreed amount of time, the court would look at what efforts you, the person receiving maintenance, made to become financially independent. Or if the maintenance was set on guidelines, which means percentages from both spouses' incomes, and your ex makes a lot less money now, he or she may ask the court to decrease the maintenance amount. The statute, the Illinois Marriage and Dissolution of Marriage Act, which is the statute governing marriages and divorces in Illinois, also provides that in the event that the recipient marries or begins living with a new significant other, maintenance would terminate. Some couples can choose to have different arrangements in their agreements as far as terminating events, but the key point is that the issue of maintenance can be very fact and very situation specific, and this is something that you need to discuss with your attorney because potentially there's a lot to lose here.
Right. Okay, Anna, this has been so wonderful. I want to end with one more question, which I always like to end on a positive note, okay? And here's my question.
I like that.
So my question is going back to court as big of a deal as the divorce? And it's a loaded question, and I want to see what you have to say, because when people get divorced, it's such a big deal, and they do have a lot of bills, and it's expensive, meaning attorney's fees, so that when they go back to court, they think it's going to be just like that. And the trauma of all the money they spent, they're thinking, oh, this is going to cost me hundreds of thousands of dollars. But in reality, I want to know if you agree with me, going back to court is not going to be anything like your divorce. Tell me what
it should not be. It should not be like your divorce, because you're probably going back for a specific issue or a specific few issues. Whereas during your divorce, you were dealing with all of it, right? The financials, the parenting, and the trauma and the emotion of going through a divorce. You also have had the opportunity to put some time between you and the divorce, and hopefully you're a healthier, stronger person than you were then. And that might help you as well.
With less anger, with less bitterness, with less resentment, so it will move quicker.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And your children, if there are children involved, are older, and the issues you might be dealing with will be very different than trying to work out a parenting schedule for, you know, a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Now, Anna, I do want to warn people and tell me if you think this is true. Here's another thing. If you go back to court after divorce and you are focused on one issue, there is a possibility that it could open up a can of worms and bleed into other issues. That actually happened to me. And so I guess the lesson I learned and what I want to share with the listeners is, if you're having an argument about that your ex owes you $3,000, you don't want to go back to court for that, because I did it. And basically I tried to get $2,000 and I ended up spending $10,000 to get $2,000. All these other issues were opened up and other things in the divorce decree changed, and it was just bad. So I want to warn people. I said I was going to close on a positive note, and this doesn't sound too positive, but it is positive in that I'm warning people not to do that. Yes, please, Anna, what were you going to say?
Rather than dealing with the anxiety of what ifs, have a very frank conversation with your attorney, or maybe if you're looking for a new attorney, with another attorney, and talk to them about all of the issues that could potentially come up. So that way they can help you figure out if it's worth it. Because like you said, Jackie, if you think you're just going up back to court for one issue, but in the conversation with the attorney, you realize that, ooh, there could be additional 2 or 3 more, you might decide it's not worth it to go back to court. The purpose of our conversation today was really to let people know that you can, if you decide it's the best alternative for you, not that you have to.
100%. Anna, you're awesome. Love having you on the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Always my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
This is the Divorce Girl Smiling Podcast with Jackie Pilisoff and my guest, Anna Krolikowska, a Chicago-based divorce attorney. And if you want to learn more or read more articles, please visit divorcegirlsmiling.com. If you want to learn more about Anna, Anna's website is annaklaw.com. Thanks so much for listening, everyone.